state tests. When I got home, I told Ma our school scored higher than the whole state on achievement tests, and I scored top of 8th grade. Ma nodded. I knew you could. That's all she said. She was proud, I could tell. But she didn't coo like Mad Dog's Ma, or go on like Mrs. Killian used to do. Daddy says, "That's not your Ma's way." But I wish it was. I wish she'd give me a little more to hold on to than, "I knew you could." Instead, she makes me feel like she's just taken me in like I was so much flannel dry on the line. March 1934. Fields of flashing light. I heard the wind rise and stumbled from my bed, down the stairs, out the front door, into the yard. The night sky kept flashing. Lightning danced down on its spindly legs. I sensed it before I knew it was coming. I heard it, smelled it, tasted it. Dust. While Ma and Daddy slept, the dust came, tearing up fields where the winter wheat set for harvest in June stood helpless. I watched the plants, surviving after so much drought and so much wind. I watched them fry or flatten or blow away, like bits of cast-off rags. It wasn't until the dust turned toward the house, like a fired locomotive, and I fled, barefoot and breathless, back inside. It wasn't until the dust hissed against the windows, until it ratcheted the roof, that Daddy woke. He ran into the storm, his overalls half-hooked over his union suit. "Daddy," I called. "You can't stop dust." Ma told me to cover the beds, push the scatter rugs against the doors, dampen the rags around the windows, wiping dust out of everything. She made coffee and biscuits, waiting for Daddy to come in. Sometime after 4, rubbing low on her back, Ma sank down into a chair at the kitchen table and covered her face. Daddy didn't come back for hours, not until the temperature dropped so low it brought snow. Ma and I sighed, grateful, staring out at the dirty flakes, but our relief didn't last. The wind snatched that snow right off the fields, leaving behind a sea of dust. Waves and waves and waves of dust rippling across our yard. Daddy came in. He sat across from Ma and blew his nose. Mud streamed out. He coughed and spit out mud. If he had cried, his tears would have been mud too, but he didn't cry. And neither did Ma. March 1934. Spring 1934. Tested by dust. While we sat taking our 6 weeks test, the wind rose and the sand blew right through the cracks in the schoolhouse wall, right through the gaps around the window glass, and by the time the tests were done, each and every one of us was coughing pretty good, and we all needed a bath. I hope we get bonus points for testing in a dust storm. April, 1934. Banks. Ma says everything we lost when the banks closed because they didn't have enough cash to go around, all the money that's ours is coming back to us in full. Good. Now we have money for a doctor when the baby comes. April, 1934. Beet wheat. County Agent Dewey had some pretty bad news. 1/4 of the wheat is lost, blown away or withered up. What remains is little more than a wisp of what it should be, and every day we have no rain, more wheat dies. County Agent Dewey says, soon there won't be enough wheat for seed to plant next fall. The piano is some comfort in all this. I go to it, and I forget the dust for hours, testing my long fingers on wild rhythms. But Ma slams around in the kitchen when I play, and after a while she sends me to the store. Joe DeLaFleur doesn't see me passing by. He rides his fences, dazed by dust. I wince at the sight of his rib-thin cattle, but he's not even seeing them. I look at Joe and know our future is drying up and blowing away with the dust. April, 1934. Give up on wheat. Ma says, try putting in a pond, Bayard. We can fill it off the windmill. We've got a good well. Daddy grumbles, the water'll seep back into the ground as fast as I can pump it, Paul. We'll dry up our well, and then we'll have nothing. Plant some other things, then, Ma says. Try cotton, sorghum. If we plant the fields in different crops, maybe some will do better than wheat. Daddy says, no, it has to be wheat. I've grown it before, I'll grow it again. But Ma says, can't you see what's happening, Baird? The wheat's not meant to be here. And Daddy says, what about those apple trees of yours, Paul? You think they are? Nothing needs more to drink than those two, but you wouldn't hear of leveling your apples, would you? Ma is bitterin'. I can see it in her mouth. A pond would work, she says, soundin' crusty and stubborn. And Daddy says, look it, Paul, who's the farmer, you or me? Ma says, who pays the bills? No one right now, Daddy says. Ma starts to quaking, but she won't let Daddy see. Instead, she goes out to the chickens, and her anger simmering over like a pot in an empty kitchen boils itself down doing chores. April, 1934. What I don't know. My teacher, Miss Freeland, is singing at the Shrine along with famous opera stars from all around the country in a play called Madame Butterfly. I've never heard of that play. Most everyone's heard of Madame Butterfly, Mad Dog says. How does that singing plowboy know something I don't? And how much more is out there most everyone else has heard of except me? April, 1934. Apple blossoms. Ma has been nursing these two trees for as long as I can remember. In spite of the dust, in spite of the drought, because of Ma's stubborn care, these trees are thick with blossoms, delicate and pinky white. My eyes can't get enough of the sight of them. I stand under the trees and let the petals fall into my hair, a blizzard of sweet-smelling flowers dropped from the boughs of the two placed there in the front yard by Ma before I was born, that she and they might bring forth fruit into our home together. May, 1934. World War. Daddy was just 17 when he fought in the Great War off in France. There's not much he's willing to say about those days, except about the poppies. He remembers the poppies, red on the graves of the dead. Daddy says that war tore France up worse than a tornado, worse than a dust storm. But no matter. The wild poppies bloomed in the trail of the fighting, brightening the French countryside. I wish I could see poppies growing out of this dust. May, 1934. Apples. Ma's apple blossoms have turned to hard green balls. To eat them now, so tart, would turn my mouth inside out, would make my stomach groan. But in just a couple months, after the baby is born, those apples will be ready, and we'll make pies and sauce and pudding and dumplings and cake and cobbler and have just plain apples to take to school and slice with my pocket knife and eat one juicy piece at a time until my mouth is clean and fresh and my breath is nothing but apple. June, 1934. Dust and rain. On Sunday, winds came, bringing a red dust like prairie fire, hot and peppery, searing the inside of my nose, the whites of my eyes, roaring dust, turning the day from sunlight to midnight. And as the dust left, rain came. Rain that was no blessing. It came too hard, too fast, and washed the soil away, washed the wheat away with it. Now, little remains of Daddy's hard work, and the only choice he has is to give up or start all over again. At the Strong Ranch, they didn't get a single drop, so who fared better? Ma looks out the window at her apple trees. Hard green balls have dropped to the ground, but there are enough left. Enough for a small harvest if we lose no more. June, 1934. Harvest. The combines have started moving across the fields, bringing in wheat, whatever has managed to grow. Mr. Tuttle delivered the first load to town, selling it for 73 cents a bushel. Not bad. Mr. Chaffin, Mr. Haverstick, and Mr. French, they've delivered their harvest, too, dropping it at the Joyce City Grain Elevator. Daddy asked Mr. Haverstick how things looked, and Mr. Haverstick said he figures he took 8 bushels off a 20-bushel acre. If Daddy gets 5 bushels to his acre, it'll be a miracle. June 1934. On the Road with Arlie. Here's the way I figure it. My place in the world is at the piano. I'm earning a little money playing thanks to Arlie Wonderdale. He and his Black Mesa boys have connections in Keys and Goodwell and Texoma, and every little crowd is grateful to hear a rag or two played on the piano by a long-legged red-haired girl, even when the piano has a few keys soured by dust. At first, Ma crossed her arms against her chest and stared me down, hard-jawed and sharp, and said I couldn't go. But the money helped convince her, and the compliment from Marley and his wife Vera that they'd surely bring my Ma along to play too, if she wasn't so far gone with a baby coming. Ma said okay, but only for the summer, and only if she didn't hear me gripe how I was tired, or see me dragging my back end around, or have to call me twice upon a morning, or find my farm chores falling down, and only if Arlie's wife Vera kept an eye on me. Arlie says my piano playing is good. I play a set of songs with the word baby in the title, like My Baby Just Cares for Me and Walking My Baby Back Home. I pick those songs on purpose for Ma, and the folks that come to hear Arlie's band, they like them fine. Arlie pays in dimes. Ma's putting my earnings away, I don't know where, saving it to send me to school in a few years. The money doesn't matter much to me. I'd play for nothing. When I'm with Arlie's boys, we forget the dust. We are flying down the road in Arlie's car, singing, laying our voices on top of the beat Miller Rice plays on the back of Arlie's seat. And sometimes, Vera up front chirps crazy notes with no words, and the sound she makes seem just about amazing. It's being part of all that, being part of Arlie's crowd I like so much, being on the road, being somewhere new and interesting. We have a fine time. And they let me play piano, too. June 1934.